Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2018 Youth Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
My name is David Glassett, as John said, and we're talking about the writings of C.S. Lewis. Before I begin, I'm trying to get everyone as they come in, do you have a pencil or a pen or some sort of writing implement? And if not, or if you would prefer, here's a marker and you can have a marker. So we will use this toward the end. Okay, so we're here to talk about C.S. Lewis and the writings of C.S. Lewis. So I'm guessing that a lot of you already know about C.S. Lewis. You're like, oh yeah, I love C.S. Lewis. Let's go to the C.S. Lewis class. Okay, so I'm so glad you are here. And I hope there are a few of you that are like, I've heard about this C.S. Lewis guy.
Yeah, his name rings a bell.
I'll come. Exactly. Yeah, his name rings a bell. Maybe I'll go find out who he is and what he is and why I should care. So I think we've got a little bit of both in the crowd today. So I'm going to start off and having some of you who love and have already read C.S. Lewis share a little bit of what you like and what you have read. So I think I can take maybe five of you. If you want to share, go ahead and just come line up right here.
Wait, what are we doing?
If you want to share what you have read and what you love about C.S. Lewis, I'll take about five of you. Okay, looks like we've got five. All right. So I want you to just tell me your name, just your first name. Tell me what you read about C.S. Lewis that you want to share about and what you really liked about it. And don't share any spoilers, okay? If you're going to tell about one of these books, don't share any spoilers because somebody might want to read it. But tell me your name, what you read, and what you loved.
My name is Abigail, and I read Alice in Wonderland, as well as a few of his other books. But I really like Alice in Wonderland because on all of Alice's adventures, then there's lots of like funny poems and riddles and things that don't make sense.
Thank you, Abigail. I want to clarify one thing. We have some names that are the similar. So Alice in Wonderland is a great book. It is by Lewis Carroll.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's totally okay. They get confused all the time. But it's still great. So everyone, Alice in Wonderland. Great. Thanks, Abigail.
My name is Alex Tate, and I have read all of the Chronicles of Narnia series.
That's seven books.
And I think my favorite one was Voyage of the Dawn Treader because, the boat is cool and how they defeat the evil.
Yes. All right, so the Voyage of the Dawn Treader, that's book number five or four, depends how you number them. And that is an excellent one. In fact, that's the one we are currently reading at home. I love it.
My name is Shem Marsden, and I really like my dad is doing a read aloud for the four older kids in our family, and we are doing the Chronicles of Narnia, and we are almost up to the last battle, but I've started to reread some of the first books. And I really like in the line, The Witch in the Wardrobe, how everything just relates to Jesus, like with Aslan and all those other creatures. And yeah, I'd say The Voyage of the Dawn Treader is my favorite too.
Awesome. So a lot of Christian symbolism. Let's give Shem a hand.
I'll be really quick. I guess brother and sister think alike because I love how in all of the books that I've read by C.S. Lewis, he's either a very direct Christian or like kind of indirect with metaphors and all this stuff. So I love that he's a Christian.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you. She didn't tell us her name, but give Marissa a hand.
My name is Eel, spelled backwards. My favorite book was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I just really liked the book.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Eel, spelled backwards. That would be Lee. Do we have an addendum?
Person Scott Card came and talked to the conference three years ago, and he talked about how at the time period he wrote that, it wasn't cool to be Christian, so he based it on Christianity, but never came out and actually said he was a Christian.
That's right. So thank you. Let me tell you a little bit about the Chronicles of Narnia, if you haven't heard of the Chronicles of Narnia. Then I'm going to tell you a little bit about C.S. Lewis and his life. And I think that'll be important to know. And then I'll tell you about some of the other writings that you may not have heard of, and what they are, and why you might be interested in them. And then at the very end, we're going to talk about some of the things that C.S. Lewis has said and written, and we will dig into some of his words in a little bit. Okay, so the Chronicles of Narnia. 7 books, they're right here, if you want to look through them all. And they center around a group of children, the Pevensey siblings. So we've got 4 of them, 2 boys and 2 girls. Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy. Wow, see, you guys know. And so it's some of their adventures in another world. And the world is called Narnia. And there's a lot of symbolism, as was referred to, a lot of Christian symbolism. Part of that Christian symbolism stems through a lion. And the lion's name is Aslan. And Aslan is a symbol of Christ. And so there's a lot of opportunity for Aslan to teach the Pevensey children and some of the other characters that come in and out of the books about Christian belief, about faith, about courage, about the ability to overcome evil, about how you face temptation, about how you face relationships, how you mend broken relationships, how you come back from making poor decisions. Some of these characters make really, really poor decisions, just like we all do sometimes. And so the Chronicles of Narnia are great. I'm just going to read through their titles real fast for you so that if you ever come across, you understand or have at least heard what they are. So the first book chronologically in the story, although it was the last book written by C.S. Lewis, is called The Magician's Nephew. It's kind of like the prequel to everything else, but he wrote it last. The second book is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which is probably the most well-known of all of the Chronicles of Narnia books. It has been made, they've been made into movies of various sorts. This is probably the most popular. Disney came out with a live-action movie about 10 or 15 years ago. The Horse and His Boy is kind of a fun one. It's a story that has, well, a horse and a boy, and how they overcome some of their adventures. Prince Caspian is about a prince named Caspian, and Prince Caspian lives at a time that is after the Pevensey children, but then the Pevensey children somehow get involved in it all, and it's weird time travel stuff, and it's kind of fun. The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, we heard about a little bit earlier. There's a picture of a boat on the front, so we'll tell you. I won't spoil anything by telling you that the Dawn Treader is a boat, and the Dawn Treader goes on a voyage. And so Prince Caspian actually comes back in this one, and so Prince Caspian is on the Dawn Treader, and some, but not all, the Pevensey children become involved, and some other characters. Some other characters are involved in here, and you guys know who some of those characters are, but not everyone may know who all the characters are, so you can be introduced to some new characters there and some of their struggles and trials that they have to face. So then we have the Silver Chair, and we're kind of moving on from some of the Pevensey children to repeat some of the characters from previous books that you're introduced to, and new challenges and new evils to overcome. And then we have the last battle, where we culminate Narnia's existence. And so we actually get to see Narnia, the world of Narnia, from beginning to end. And you get some pretty cool symbolism going throughout the entire series. So if you've never read the Chronicles of Narnia, They are definitely at your level of reading. You could probably read through them pretty quickly if I know homeschool children. If you're like any of my children, I have an 8-year-old who could read through these, you know, at a pretty easy clip. But they're so great, and they're so deep, and so wonderful in a lot of the symbolism and just awesome stories. And the thing that my children absolutely hate about Chronicles of Narnia, there's one thing, if they could say that something that they hate about Chronicles of Narnia, is that each chapter ends with a cliffhanger. And so when I'm reading at night, I'm like, all right, well, that's the end of the chapter. Time to go to sleep. They're like, no, you can't stop there. And so I said, sorry, I got to go to bed too. And so that's the one thing they really don't like about Chronicles of Narnia. C.S. Lewis is such a good writer to build up your anticipation of what's going on. And then it just ends the chapter. And I'm go, got to stop there. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about C.S. Lewis, the man, and his life. Because it's really fascinating. Who heard the story about Jack yesterday? Who was in my biography? Oh, just a few of you. Okay, so don't spoil it. So I'm going to tell the story about Jack. I'm going to add a few more details that you didn't have yesterday. Okay, so Jack, and I'll spoil the story right here and right now. Jack is C.S. Lewis. All right? So if you were friends with C.S. Lewis when he was alive, C.S. Lewis lived at the beginning of the 1900s. If you were friends with him while he was alive, you would not have called him C.S. C stood for Clive. S stood for Staples. You would not have called him Clive, and you would not have called him Staples. You would not have called him Louis or anything like that. If you were friends with C.S. Lewis, you would have called him Jack. That is what he preferred to be called. And the reason why he preferred to be called Jack is because he had a dog when he was a young boy, and the dog's name was Jaxie. And he really liked this dog. And one day when he was about 3 or 4, Jaxie ran out into the road and was hit by a wagon and was killed. And devastated C.S. Lewis. And he told his family that he, from that day on, wanted to be called Jaxie. And so he was called Jaxie, and then eventually it just became Jack from then on. So he grew up in Belfast, Ireland. It's now Northern Ireland, but it was just Ireland then. And he grew up in this home that was called Little Lea, L-E-A, sorry, not L-E-E. Sorry, eel spelled backwards. So he grew up in this home called Little Lea, and it was kind of cobbled together in a weird way. And so it had lots of places to explore, lots of empty hallways and rooms and things. And he just had one sibling. He had an older brother, Warney. And it was in Ireland. Has anyone ever been to Ireland or England? The weather can be sort of dreary sometimes, just rainy and overcast and blah. So when he was a kid, it was often, even in the summertime, rainy and dreary and blah. And so his mom had this belief that if her kids ever got wet in the rain or something like that, they would get sick and die, and you know, horrible things would happen. So she kept them inside. You can't go outside. And so they had to, it was a bit paranoid. That's okay, though, you know. Some people are paranoid about things. But they made the best of it, and they explored the house, and they would find little corners just to hide and to read or to write their own books or poetry or things like that. So he grew up in that way, and his family was not overtly religious. They didn't go to church every Sunday, but they were religious enough that it was important to them that their children were baptized and received communion and things like that. And when C.S. Lewis was about 13 or 14, he was sent to a boarding school across the Irish Sea in England, and this boarding school was awful. His older brother had been there for a couple years, and he was there for only 9 months, and it was absolutely some of the worst experiences he had in his life. And part of it was because it was just really cruel. If any of you have read any Dickens books about boarding schools that are just really cruel, that's what it was. And thankfully, after 9 months, the school got closed down because of quote-unquote low enrollment, and the headmaster was immediately sent off to a mental insane asylum because he was so cruel to the children. So after that, he got sent to another boarding school, and it was at that boarding school he met a friend by the name of Arthur Greaves, and this friend was really important because this friend was a Christian. Now, at this point, C.S. Lewis had started to abandon his family's past in Christianity and was an atheist. And so he met this friend named Arthur, and what really tied him to Arthur was a love of Norse mythology, of all things. C.S. Lewis loved Norse mythology. He loved reading the myths of the Norwegian culture. And Arthur did too. And so they bonded over this love of Norse mythology and reading and exploring the stories of Thor and whoever else. I don't know. And so that was really important. Another thing that C.S. Lewis found very important at this time was he, after the 2 years at that boarding school, his father sent him to be with a tutor, a specific tutor to prepare him for college. And this tutor was actually the only person that C.S. Lewis ever allowed to call him Clive, first of all. So for whatever reason, he had enough respect for this man that he wouldn't correct him to call him Jack. So this tutor taught him two important things at this stage in C.S. Lewis's life. The first thing that he taught him was a deep ability for logic and reasoning. Everything he taught him had to be based in logic and rational thought. And the second thing he taught him was a deep belief in atheism. So he had already tended toward atheism, or a belief that there is no God. But this this tutor, this friend, eventually turned into a friend, really hammered that home into C.S. Lewis. So it prepared him very well for college. He got into Oxford, which is one of the most prestigious universities in England, and he wanted to study philosophy, which is kind of an extension of that rational thought and thinking. And so he studied philosophy, and he completed his philosophy degree. And at Oxford, you don't get grades like A, B, C, D. You get first degrees, that's your highest degree. You get second degrees, and you get third degrees. And so a first degree is super, super, super hard to get. Really, really hard. But C.S. Lewis got a first. And that was really exciting. He's like, yeah, I'm really armed to go do something great. So I want to go be a professor. He went to be a professor of, wanted to be a professor of philosophy. That's what he got his degree in. And so there are some jobs in being a professor of philosophy at various colleges around, and no one would hire him. He couldn't get any of those jobs. And so he's like, well, I can't get a job. Might as well go back to school and get another degree. So he ended up not getting just one more degree, but two more degrees. He got a degree in what they called the greats, which is like classics, the classics, Greek and stuff like that, Latin. And he also got a degree in English literature, which is kind of an up-and-coming subject at the time. So not only did he get two extra degrees, but he got firsts in both the greats and English literature. So now he was armed with three firsts from Oxford, which was unheard of. And he was able to then get a professorship at Oxford, of all places, in English literature. So he became a scholar and professor of English literature. And he had some trials to overcome in his life. When he was in boarding school, he didn't really feel like he fit in. None of the other kids really, he didn't make a lot of friends. Arthur was maybe an exception. And the reason was he wasn't very athletic. In fact, he had a thumb thing. There's a genetic thing with his thumb where his thumb didn't work quite right. And so it was really hard for him to hold a ball or throw a ball or anything like that. So sports, it just didn't work for him. And so he felt a little bit lonely in that way. He also lived at a time of what was then known as the Great War, which is World War I. And he fought in World War I. He got injured on the battlefield and sent home. And so he had all these different experiences in his life that were kind of tending him toward overcoming adversity and challenges. So once he got his professorship, he was still an atheist. He still had no belief in God and no inclination that anything would change. He got involved with a group called the Inklings. And the Inklings was a group of people who were writers and thinkers, and they just wanted to get together and share some of the things that they had written and things that they were thinking about. So C.S. Lewis, he was a thinker, and he was a writer. He liked writing poetry and stories, and he loved reading things. There was one of his favorite authors was a man named George MacDonald, who was actually a Christian writer, and he thought that was kind of, he loved how he wrote, but, you know, the Christian stuff was, you know, whatever. So among these people that were in this group called the Inklings, there were a couple that were more influential than the others. One of them that was the most influential was a man by the name of J.R.R. Tolkien. Yes. Anyone ever heard of J.R.R. Tolkien?
The one who wrote the Harry Potter.
He wrote the Lord of the Rings series, The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings. Okay, so J.R.R. Tolkien was a Christian, and not only was he a Christian, he was a Catholic, which was like even more way out there for C.S. Lewis. And so he was actually told, you know, growing up as a Protestant, C.S. Lewis was told never trust the Catholics, and so now he's got this great friend who is a great writer and thinker who is Catholic. And so he's starting to see that he's being surrounded by this Christian thought. His great friend Arthur, who he still writes letters to, a couple people in this group called the Inklings, some of his favorite thinkers and writers like George MacDonald, and J.K. Like George MacDonald, and so he's, you know, kind of influenced by that in a way. And finally, he gets to a point where he believes in a higher power, and that's about it. He believes that there is some greater good in the world, and then after another year or two, that belief turns into a belief in God. And then after another couple of years, that belief turns into a belief that Jesus Christ is his Savior and a turn to Christianity. And he said the thing that got him over to that point as a Christian was he was talking, and I believe it was Tolkien, I'd have to double check, but I think it was Tolkien. They had a really late night walk. They were walking through Oxford, and Tolkien says, you know, we talk about all these myths and all these experiences, these stories. The only difference between the myth of the Norse mythologies and the Greek mythologies and the Roman mythologies and all these other mythologies and the story of Jesus Christ and the mythology around that is that it's true. That's the only difference. And that struck C.S. Lewis. And he pondered on that and thought about that. And he said his conversion actually came while he was sitting on a bus on his way to the zoo. He was looking out the window, and it just came to him in that way. So after that, his career actually took off as a writer after his conversion. And so he wrote a lot of fiction, kind of like the Chronicles of Narnia. He also has a kind of a science fiction series that's called the Space Trilogy is usually what it's called. It's a book of three books. But he also wrote a lot of nonfiction. So that's what I want to talk a little bit about right now, is what are some of these other nonfiction writings that you might not have heard of that might be interesting to you. So we'll spend a few minutes. I'll go through some of them that I have here. And then we're going to look through some of the words that he actually wrote. So let me just real quickly go through some of these books. So this is just a collection that, you know, publishers have put together. And I'm going to mention just a few. One of his most well-known nonfiction is called Mere Christianity. So during World War II, the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation or company or whatever the C stands for, asked him to create a radio series of explaining Christianity to the British people. And so he's put together a series of these radio series, a series of these radio chats. So Franklin Roosevelt in the United States had the fireside chats. Well, C.S. Lewis in England had these Christianity chats, I guess. I don't know what else you want to call them. And they were then collected into a series, into a book. And he wanted it to be representative of what Christians believe in general. He wanted to avoid specifically saying, well, this is what this denomination believes, and this is what that denomination believes, and this is what that denomination believes. And so it's a broad look at Christianity, and there's a lot of really cool sections in there. In fact, when we go through the quotes, several of them are from Mere Christianity. Okay, there's another one called The Screwtape Letters, and I think a few of you were mentioning The Screwtape Letters. So this, The Screwtape Letters, is kind of... He took a little quirky approach, and it's as if there are two devils, one who is the uncle and one who is the nephew. So the uncle and the nephew, devils, are communicating in letters. That's why it's the Screwtape Letters. So the Screwtape is one of the devils, and the other one's name is Wormwood. And so the uncle is trying to tutor his nephew on how to be a good devil and how to convince his nephew's subject, so this person who's living on the earth, how to convince him away from a belief in God and religion and Christianity. So it's C.S. Lewis's kind of imaginary way of how does Satan work? What is he trying to tell us? And then how can we counter that? So there's some really kind of fun ways of thinking about how do we counter the adversary in our life. There's another one called The Great Divorce. Now this one's interesting because he takes essentially an allegory or a fable, and it's a bus ride. And he's one of the characters in the book, but it's a bus ride from hell to heaven, and the things that you have to do along the way. And one of the main points is you get to choose whether or not you stay in heaven. That's your choice. You get to make that choice. So that's a really kind of interesting one. And randomly, I ran into a man, and I saw that he had a book that looked interesting to me. It was a book about religion in modern times. And so I was asking him about the book, and we got kind of involved in this conversation about religion and Christianity. And then he said, yeah, I love it. And we were talking about C.S. Lewis. I was mentioning that I was going to give this presentation. He goes, you know what? I read The Great Divorce every year. He said, it's that meaningful to me. And it reminds me of, you know, what I need to be doing. It's like, all right, cool. Great Divorce, really meaningful to that guy. So maybe it'll be meaningful to you. There are a few others in here. Let's see, The Problem of Pain, where he tries to take the question of why does God allow evil to exist? And he goes through why is there evil in the world. Miracles is kind of his logical thinking through why that miracles really truly do happen. And there's a belief that miracles don't really happen in our world ever or today, and that miracles truly do happen. And another one is A Grief Observed, and this is a really touching one because he wrote this, and actually he published it under a pen name because he didn't really want his name attached to it at the time. But his wife passed away, and they had only been married for a few years before she died of cancer. And so it was how he dealt, just his dealing with the pain and the grief And because it's a grief observed, it's just the observations of his grief. So those are some of his other nonfictions. Another one that I would heavily recommend is a speech that he wrote that was turned into an essay called The Weight of Glory. And that one's a pretty cool one. So The Weight of Glory, where he talks about, we are children of a glorious being, and there is a weight that goes along with being children of our Heavenly Father. Okay, can I ask John, will you hand those out? And Braden, will you hand those out? All right, so these are our quotes that we're going to go through. Now, these are all quotes that have been given in General Conference. C.S. Lewis is often quoted in General Conference. He was quoted this past General Conference by Elder Renland. And that quote is actually on here, if we get to it. Okay, so let me give you your instructions while we finish up. It looks like we're almost there. The instructions are, find somebody in the room whom you have not yet met. All right? Don't go yet. Go when I say go. I'll come grab those when we break. Okay, find someone in the room you haven't met. So you'll be in groups of two. If there's an odd number, you can form one group of three. That's fine. Thanks. There is one side that says, this is side one. All right? Do only side one. This is side one. What you're going to do is, individually, you're just going to read through the quotes and underline the power words. Words that stand out to you, or phrases that stand out to you as being, this is really powerful to me. And then you're going to share with your partner what those power words or phrases are and why. You might have time to only do one or two of the power words. You might underline 8 or 10. But just share one or two and why it was powerful for you. Any questions on the instructions? I'll review them real quickly. Find a partner who you have not yet met. Sit down together. Read through side one. Underline the power words or phrases to you, and then share with your partner one or two of those and why they were powerful. Go! Okay, so at this point, you should be underlining the power words or power phrases. Okay, take about 15 more seconds to finish up your underlining. Even if you don't get all the way to the bottom, that's fine. All right, now with your partner, just share one or two of the power words or phrases you underlined and why it was meaningful to you. All right, if you haven't switched, go ahead and switch and have the other person share. Okay, go ahead and wrap up your conversation. I hope you had some good things to share. Is there one person who wants to share something that was meaningful to them? All right, come on up.
I picked, but he's building a palace because, like, it's explaining that he is helping you during in your trials, and he is helping in you make your life better during the trials that you have, and that you'll be able to put some of your burden on him so that way you can be able to work on the stuff that you need to work on.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right, so we don't have time to do the same thing for side two, but I would encourage you to do side two. Find the power words and the power phrases in side two and share them with a parent, a sibling, someone else, and you will be able to feel some of the strength and the power that's in his words. I'm going to read the very last one on the back on side two. And that's the one that Elder Renland used in his past General Conference talk, and this will be our closing. Some say of temporal suffering, no future bliss can make up for it. So you're thinking, this awful thing is happening to me or has happened, and there's nothing in the future that can make up for this suffering that I've had. Not knowing that heaven, once attained, will work backwards and turn even that agony into a glory. You think about Joseph Smith in Liberty Jail. Know thou, my son, that all these things shall be for thy good. That's exactly where this is going. The blessed will say, we have never lived anywhere except heaven, meaning that even in your trials are for your growth and strength and your glory to be with our Father in heaven again. I love all of you. You guys are amazing. I'm so glad you are here, and I hope that you find great strength and joy in your testimony through the writings of C.S. Lewis. I hope that you find great strength and joy in sharing your love of literature with others. And I say that in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen. Thank you, guys. Have a good lunch.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.